I was reading a story on one of the international news websites today about drought in Australia. New South Wales is going through one of the worst droughts in its history. It's been listed as 100% in drought. Just about every day, if you look at international television stations, you see evidence of extreme weather, the heat wave, which has been experienced in parts of Asia, which has been experienced in many parts of Europe, the terrible rains, the drought that we've had for 3 years. The drought, which is kind of half broken, the drought not only in New South Wales, it is the worst affected state in Australia, but there are many other states that are affected as well. And I was sent a link by a listener to an article in Nature magazine, Droughts, Heat Waves and Floods, How to Tell When Climate Change is to Blame. Weather forecasters will soon provide instant assessments of global warming's influence on extreme events. And a local scientist, Professor Mark New, director of the African Climate and Development Initiative, got together with a couple of other academics from other universities, including Friederike Otto, a climate modeler at the University of Oxford. And Mark, you tried to look at using these new techniques which are available in this relatively new science called attribution. You try to look at this drought that we kind of still have lingering on, and how much of that is due to normal cyclical patterns and how much due to global climate change.
Yeah, that's exactly what we've done, John.
You just talk to me, give us a little background in this relatively new development of people being able to attribute pretty much in real time or just soon afterwards whether an extreme event is related to global climate change.
Yeah, well, the basic methodology is to compare the world that we have against a hypothetical world that we would have had without greenhouse gases. So we're essentially comparing two worlds, and because we don't have the world without greenhouse gases, we use climate models to estimate what that world would look like. So we've run climate models in almost what we call near real time, but sort of a month or two behind time, to estimate to get a measure from the model of what the model thinks the present-day climate is with greenhouse gases. And then we set up a parallel experiment where we remove the global warming signal from the climate model, and then we can also then calculate what the weather or climate would have been if we didn't have greenhouse gases. And by comparing those two, then we can see how the risk of a particular event, like the drought that we've experienced over the last 3 years, has changed compared to this, what we call a counterfactual world of a world without global warming.
How reliable do the people who practice attribution science believe it to be?
It depends. We try to use multiple methods. So we use a range of different modeling methods, as well as using statistical methods with the actual measured climate. And using all of those different methods, we can then get a better feel for whether we've got a good attribution statement or not. And if they all agree, then we could be fairly convinced that for a particular event, we do see a global warming signal. But in some cases, we don't. And then we report that actually there's no attributable global warming signal in that particular case. In the case of the Cape drought...
In our particular case, there is a very clear global warming signal.
Yeah. Well, there's a very clear attribution signal from the modeling methods that we use, saying that the risk of a drought of the sort of magnitude we've experienced is about three times today than it would have been if we didn't have global warming.
It was 3 years in a row to have as little rain as we had 3 years in a row was kind of unheard of. I mean, it wasn't entirely unheard of, because there have been periods in the historical record where it has been dry for that length of time, but those periods have been very, very, very few and far between. Now they are going to come much closer, or the likelihood that there is going to be a repeat three-year event is that much higher.
That's exactly the case. So our best estimate is that today, with global warming, it's a 1-in-100-year event. So without global warming, it would have been a 1-in-300-year event. And we've also done analysis where we look forward to if we had another degree of warming, and that would, again, essentially triple the likelihood of this event. So we'd be going from a 1-in-100-year event to a 1-in-30-year event. And we're likely to have this extra degree of warming sometime in the next 15 to 20 years. So every time we double the amount of global warming, it seems like we are trebling the probability of an event like this.
And this is not just academic, Mark. This is incredibly important, because knowing this and taking it seriously is very important for developing water management policy.
Yeah, exactly. As I think you've discussed many times on your show, the water resource system in Cape Town or anywhere is designed to have a particular level of reliability. I think in our case, it's sort of to fail, so to speak, once every 50 years. But if the probability of the climate stress is changing, then your water resource system has to be designed to change along with that, or you just have to be able to be prepared to live higher probability of failure. And I guess it's finding the balance between those in terms of investment in more secure water supply if the risk of drought increases, versus maybe also being prepared for the kind of measures we've had over the last few years and being prepared to take those on board more frequently.
It's incredibly difficult to be a politician making these kinds of choices at the moment, because spend the money and it turns out not to be needed, you're going to be wrapped over the knuckles. Don't spend the money and it turns out to be needed, you're going to be wrapped over the knuckles. So it's very difficult to get absolutely correct the balance between finding new sources of water, spending money to reuse the water that we're already using, and all the other demands on that relatively scarce resource.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that's where transparency in planning and decision making is so important. And I think the city of Cape Town certainly learned a lot over the last 3 years in terms of making their thinking more transparent and open in terms of their water bulletins. But certainly being explicit about the kind of risks that you are investing against and where you believe additional investment is far too expensive for the benefit and risk reduction, and being transparent about that, I think, is the key, because there is always a diminishing return on investment. The more you engineer a system, the less return you get per dollar of or rand of investment. So at some stage, you have to say there's a residual risk that we just have to live with.
Professor Mark New, thank you, Director of the African Climate and Development Initiative.